Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and just like every week, we have a lot of fantastic quilt guests, and today I get to play a fangirl because I get to talk to somebody whose work I have admired for years and years and years. Nancy Kern is an award-winning quilter. She makes masterful applique quilts in the Baltimore style. They are just fantastic. It's one of the types of quilts that I've always loved, and I've followed Nancy's work for many, many years. And so, yay, today she's here to tell us about applique and Baltimore albums and the type of work that she does. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pat. I'm looking forward to talking to you today.
You know, I read your bio, and you have been sewing since you were a little girl, like many, many people do. When did you discover applique?
I think at the very beginning when I started quilting, I didn't have the benefit of any teachers. I had a couple of books, and this was the mid-70s, and I just had been sewing for years and years, and I looked at quilts, and I said, oh, those are pretty. I'd like to try one, and it's just sewing, right?
Right, yeah.
So I convinced myself, and I just my first quilt was a Dresden plate, so that's piecing and applique. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that applique was supposed to be scary.
Oh, well, see, you know, when you don't know, you just do it.
So I just started right away with it.
Right. Now, I want to focus a little bit on Baltimore's because that style of quilt is just so fantastic. Would you explain to people what a Baltimore album style quilt is?
Well, the word album indicates a variety of blocks. So a Baltimore album has – sorry about that – has several different patterns in them. Very seldom do they have a repeat block. Mm-hmm. So these quilts were made in Baltimore in the mid-1850s, generally between 1846 and 1853, and they have very characteristic looks, red woven baskets, some monument buildings, things like big floral bouquets.
Mm-hmm.
Special fabrics used were blue ombre prints, which are shaded, you know, a variation from a dark to a lighter fabric and then back mm-hmm. to dark.
So
a lot of red and green, but the red, green, blue are the hallmarks of those blocks with other colors scattered in.
When did you decide that this was a style that really spoke to you, that you really were, like, excited to make them?
I think it was about 1990. I was living in Connecticut at the time, and Ellie Sienkiewicz was coming to our guild to give some classes, and so I bought her book in mm-hmm. advance, and I looked at the pictures, and I just started to drool.
Yeah.
I said, oh, my gosh, I could never do that. And guess what? I can.
Yes, you can. Yes,
so
you can.
So I think, you know, just if you want to do it, you learn mm-hmm. how.
Now, you know, Baltimore albums, anybody can make an applique quilt with one of, you know, about 800 different applique methods. What particular applique method do you like to do?
My personal favorite is needle turn applique. I use freezer paper for a template, and I iron that to the right side of my fabric. Then I trace around that with the clover fine white marker, which irons off when you're finished.
Ah, okay.
And then I use that marked line to guide myself, you know, to see how far to turn under the seam allowance, and then I blind stitch it down.
So tell me about the iron off marker that you like, because I've you know, when I learned to needle turn, basically my teachers were like, you know, use a pen or something, because you're going to turn it under anyways, you're not going to see it, but that makes it more stressful, because if you don't get it exactly turned under, you know,
right,
be,
and even, even if you get your edge turned under, then you have the part that's being overlapped by another piece, and you risk not quite covering that line if you mm-hmm. use a permanent marker of some sort. So I like this because I can mark all the way around my shape, even the part that's going to get covered by another piece, and gives me, helps me get things aligned properly. But then when you iron this, when you're finished, the mark disappears. It's kind of a wax base. So it
okay.
just melts.
Oh, okay.
And the one tip on that marker, though, a lot of people get frustrated with it because it goes on clear. They think it's not working. It's a liquid wax.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's actually wax, but that's
right.
what I'm going to call it for.
Right.
And it goes on clear, so you don't have to mark back and forth 20 times.
Mm-hmm.
You're just using up the ink.
Yeah.
So it takes, you know, seconds usually, you know, 15 seconds maybe for it to appear.
Mm-hmm.
And it works, of course, best on dark-colored fabrics. If I have a white fabric, obviously it's not going to work. In that case, I wait until right before I'm ready to sew that piece, and I mark it with one of the air-disappearing purple markers.
Okay. Okay. So these are great tips, Nancy.
Oh, thank you. I try to avoid, I mean, people use whatever they like and what works best for them. But I try to personally avoid the blue marking pens because those you have to wash out. And just spritzing them with a spray bottle isn't good enough because that just disperses the ink and it rises back up in halos around things.
Oh.
So you really have to run water through the piece to take the ink out. And I choose not to wash my finished pieces because even though I've pre-washed all my fabrics and I think they're all set, I don't want to take that chance that they might bleed.
Right. You have put many, many hours in some of your quilts. It's they're made for display pretty much, right?
Well, and mainly for just keepsakes, really. I do put them out on the guest bed. And they're mostly a couple of my Baltimore quilts I let my friends sleep under, but my big one, the one that won the big prizes, I don't let too many people sleep under that one.
No.
I don't want to put that kind of stress on my guests.
That's right. The ones who know, they know. They're like, So tell me, Nancy, I want to talk a little bit about another technique that you do for your applique, which is thread basting. And I'm not a thread baster, so I am really curious. Can you explain to me why you like it and what exactly it is?
Okay. The main reason I like it is because it keeps my pieces nice and flat. We've all seen applique where the applique piece itself looks like a little tent on top of the background. You know, it sticks up. And that's because the applique piece wasn't adhered to the background well enough before the stitching, and it shifted. Mm-hmm. And then you end up with that fullness. The thread basting, how I do it is I have my marked line on my top of the fabric, and I position it on my background, usually with straight pins in the seam allowance, and then I thread baste inside the seam allowance about, at least as far away from the seam as the seam allowance itself is wide. So if for example, if I have an eighth of an inch seam allowance, I'm going to baste a little more than an eighth of an inch inside the seam line. And what that does is it gives me a nice firm wall that when I'm turning that edge under, I cannot squish those pieces closer together than the edges.
Oh.
So it doesn't pucker up in the middle.
Right. Oh,
and that's
okay.
one of the compliments that I get most often on my work is how nice and flat the pieces are. And I really think it's from the thread basting. If you have a piece that's too narrow to baste in on the interior, for example, a very narrow stem, on those, I decide which side I want to sew down first, and I baste right on the seam line on the opposite side.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So then the stitching, when I stitch the first side, will be then effectively basting for the second side.
So when you're doing the thread basting, are you using a white cotton thread? Is that what you recommend?
You can use just about anything but a really fine silk thread because silk is too slippery to baste with. What I like to use, because I have so much of it and it's inexpensive and it grips really well, is the Serger cone thread. That's a 100% poly thread. You can get the big cones for very inexpensively. And because it's almost I call it a fuzzy thread. Mm-hmm. It grips the two layers of fabric together nicely. They don't shift. So, okay. And I use a regular applique needle, which I prefer the number 11 straw or Milner's needles. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, baste the along inside that seam allowance or seam line so that mm-hmm. I can tuck my edges under, preferably without having to cut the basting.
Right.
The reason for that is as soon as you cut it, it can start loosening up and moving.
Right, right. Oh, wow. Okay, I want to get one more thing in, Nancy. That was really, really good.
I
have a whole new respect for thread basting now. That's
well, honestly, I've converted quite a few people to it.
Yeah.
So give it a try.
Okay, I will give it a try. I want to talk about one more thing, and then we'll wrap it up. Can you give a tip for people who want to attempt a Baltimore album? What would be the, you know, kind of the approach that you would tell them if they've never done it before? You know, they want to recreate something they've seen.
Okay. I think before I'd attempt a really complex Baltimore album, I'd make sure that my applique skills were up to that level.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can handle lots of pieces on a block, you can get your placement accurate, and that your stitches are nice and hidden. I want to mention mm-hmm. one thing. The most common problem I see in students, and this is probably for about 90% of appliqueers, is that they pull their threads too tight when they're stitching, and you get these little puckered edges.
Mm-hmm.
If you can see little, you know, scalloped edges on your piece, your tension on your thread is definitely too tight. What you want is just it to lay snugly but not embedded into the background fabric. Mm-hmm. So don't tighten up too much on that thread when you're stitching.
Well, Nancy, this has been so fun. You know, I might have to have you come back and tell us some more another time.
Well, anytime. I'd love to chat with you.
Now, Nancy's work, you have a Facebook page right now,
yes.
So people can find you there at Nancy Kearns, right?
Yes, and it's K-E-R-N-S.
That's right, another an S on the end. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
This American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast will be back right after the break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
This is the TogiNet Radio Network, radio with a cutting edge.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have with me now April Rosenthal. April,
Hi,
how are you?
I'm good.
April is a designer, and her patterns are under Prairie Grass Patterns. So if you have one of those out there that you've made, this is April, and she's a fabric designer and a new author. So I am very excited to talk to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun.
Your quilts are just so, I find them, they're happy quilts. Your quilts are always so happy. They make me smile, and I want to go make them all. You know, that's always the... the downfall of looking at your quilts. It's like, oh.
That's good, though. That makes me happy to hear.
I know. Some of your quilts are, kind of straightforward, but you also are not afraid to go out there and put out something that's a little bit more complex, like your dahlia pattern, which probably you have fantastic directions and don't make it complex. But a lot of people think that's a little harder quilt to do.
Definitely. I think one of my favorite things about quilting is that because there's such a strong tradition there and there's a lot of history there, there's a lot of room for looking to see if there's a better way to do something that's been done in the past. And so I like to find things like the dahlia quilt where, it had been done traditionally with Y-seams and templates, and to find a better way or an easier way to make something that's still beautiful and traditional, but maybe make it more user-friendly for the people who would like to try it but are afraid. So.
I know. And, the way that you put your colors together, they make the quilt look so fresh and current. It's just not – doesn't look like the one that, my family had on their bed many years ago.
Right. The first dahlia quilt that I ever saw was made out of, country blue and navy. It was a nice 1985-ish color palette. And – the design intrigued me so much, but I thought, man, I've got to make this more accessible to people now. And so, that was my goal, was just to take some colors that would really resonate and really be happy. Like you said, I love to design things that make people just wake up a little bit and go, ooh, this is fun. This is exciting. Let's have a good day, So.
Exactly. And that one is made in your fabric line, right?
It is, yeah.
Oh, so tell us about your fabric line. It is just gorgeous.
Thank you. My fabric line is called Best Day Ever.
Yay.
And I've had several people think it's a reference to SpongeBob SquarePants. I would love to claim that, but I've never seen that particular episode, so I'm not sure. But it's just basically I wanted to create a collection that was just really happy. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of people wait for happiness to come to them. And I think, the best thing that somebody can do is take a hold of it and make their day, their best day ever. And so that was my inspiration, was just finding a way to make yourself happy no matter what situation you're in. And so it's bright colors, it's bold prints, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's gorgeous yellows with a really nice navy, sort of a, I don't even know what shade, how the shades are, but I really like that piece and the greens. It's just great. And this is in stores now, right?
It is. Yep, it shipped in October.
Yes. Yay. So tell me a little bit more about how you like to encourage people to be creative, because that's sort of the focus of your writing. Anytime that you're writing articles on your website, that's what I get from it, is the very great encouraging.
Yeah, thank you. I really am a firm believer that everybody is creative, that everybody can be creative. And I get a lot of people who tell me, oh, no, you're so creative and I'm not. I can't do that. Hand me a pattern and I can follow it step by step, but I'm not creative. And honestly, I feel like if you hand anybody the right tools, they can't help but be creative. Mm-hmm. And so my goal is always to encourage people to learn some basic skills, and then watch what they can do with their own intuition, with their own creativity. And it's so fun. I've taught so many first-time quilters. Brought them on and said, you can do this. I will walk with you every step of the way, and you can do this. Mm-hmm. And it's so fun to watch them just light up and go, oh, my gosh, I made something amazing. I made something beautiful. And, I help very little. They get to that point where they've got the skills, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden they start kicking in, and they start having intuition about it, and they start loving what they're doing. And it's so fun for me to watch, because so many people, I think, grow up thinking they're not creative. And when they mm-hmm. realize they are, that just opens up a whole venue of possibilities for them. And I think it's just amazing.
And you have a lot of really nice tutorials on your site that people can go and get that are not overwhelming. They're great ways to go out if they are just learning on all different topics.
I do. I've got a rotary cutting tutorial that's really fun for people. That's something that I've struggled, mm-hmm. not me personally, but struggled teaching people how to do in person. They're really afraid of the rotary cutter. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a rotary cutting 101 tutorial on there, and a couple of little hacks for four patch blocks and half square triangles, mm-hmm. and just some little tricks that after you've made thousands of them, you come up with. Yeah. And I thought, well, maybe somebody else would benefit from this. So,
well, now, all of this greatness that you've been making, you put into a book. When does the book come out?
You know, I just got my first advanced copy today, like an hour ago. I know. I was so excited. Originally, it was slated to come out the first week of November. And then, I've never heard of this before, but the publisher wrote to us and said, or not the publisher, the printer said, hey, we've got a paper shortage. I didn't realize we were using fancy paper, but I guess, you know.
Goodness.
It's now slated to come out the end of December. So, you know, it's a great gift for Christmas, but you'll probably have to say it's pre-ordered for you. It'll be there when it's there. So.
Well, it's called Bedroom Style Perfectly Pieced. What was your concept for the book? You know, what was the sort of mode you went into when you were designing the quilts to put together?
Okay, so the jumping off point was a lot of times when I'm talking to somebody about making something, they see a pattern and they go, oh, that's kind of a cool design, but I hate that fabric. I would never make that quilt. And so in discussions with them, I've said, well, you know, you can switch out the fabric and make it look totally different. And they can't picture that in their mind. They have a hard time picturing what something's going to look like without seeing it on paper. And so my concept kind of started there. And working with different styles and showing people how, you know, you can take a pattern that looks very, very modern and change it to look very, you know, country farmhouse just by switching the fabrics. And so the book itself has 10 quilt patterns in 5 different styles. So minimal zen, global eclectic, farmhouse, coastal, and vintage.
Oh.
And then, yeah. And so 5 different styles, 2 quilts per style. And then what I've done is gone through each of those quilts and make sample blocks in all the other styles so that you can see what it would look like with different fabric.
And so I love then you that get this, part.
Yeah, it's really fun. And so you get, you know, a really vintage traditional quilt and you put it in really modern fabrics and all of a sudden it's a totally different quilt. And then, of course, it's centered, they're all queen size quilts. So it's centered around, you know, your own bedroom and making your room reflect your style. So.
Oh, well, that's really interesting to have them all the same size to fit a bed because
they
you know,
are,
often, yeah, the books will have all different sizes. Now, I am totally intrigued. I have an advanced copy too, and I've been looking at the Friday Bazaar. Can you describe that one? Because I keep looking at it thinking, oh my gosh, that is so interesting. Just the interlocking of the blocks.
Yeah. So it's a quilt. I originally saw a spool block that looked like a spool, but it had, you know, little pointed ends. And I thought, man, those interlock so well, they'd be very cool. But I was trying to figure out a way to do it without, again, partial seams and, you know, a really frustrating pattern to put together. And the actual construction of the block is rectangles, squares, and quarter square triangles. That's all it is. It's just a matter of layout. It's very, very cool, and it's a super fun quilt. But if somebody looks at it, they think, man, that must have been so hard.
Right. That's what
yeah,
I did.
It's a
that's
really
what
fun,
I did.
And it's great to show off big prints as well, big prints of fabric.
That is really, really a spectacular piece in there, just
Thank
from,
you.
You know, the design. And it does look like it's much easier than you. So everybody, I think we're really smart when we make that one, April.
That's, I know, that's my goal. That's my goal, is to make you look really good when you make my pattern.
Now, you told me you've been working on, as you described it, an insane little project recently.
Anybody who follows my blog for even a little while will know I'm obsessed with tiny squares. I don't incorporate them in my patterns very often because then people get mad at me and don't like me anymore. But I like to do them. And so recently we did a little mini quilt swap for my quilt cast. We do a little podcast, me and Amy Ellis. And just a small flop, it was, you know, a couple dozen people. And I decided that I was going to incorporate my love of little tiny squares. And so I made an 18-inch mini quilt for this swap. And there was over almost 300 one-inch squares in that little 18-inch quilt.
Oh, my gosh.
It was beautiful. I almost didn't want to give it away. There's actually a picture of it, I think, on the little ad for this show and then on my Instagram, too. But it was delightful. It was so much fun. And my husband was like, you are having more fun with this than you've had in a long time with sewing. He's like, maybe you should just, like, have an ongoing project with tiny squares. And I thought that was a brilliant idea. So may see more of that coming up.
Right. So you have a new job now, the Tiny Square Project.
That's right.
That's right. Now tell people that you and Amy Ellis do a podcast that people can download and listen to where you two talk together. How often do you do that?
We do that weekly. So every Wednesday, typically, we record that show. It's on iTunes and Stitcher.
and it's called Quilt Cast.
Great.
It's really fun. We kind of cover just topics that are interesting to sewists or quilters, and, you know, sometimes it's a little more shooting the breeze, and sometimes it's, you know, techniques and skills and skill building. So it just kind of depends on what's coming up.
Now, I want to go back to the little squares.
Yeah.
Do you have a tip for people who want to work with tiny pieces like that? Is there like one thing that, you know, like, do you need to starch that, or is there something like that?
You know, I use a little technique, and I actually recorded a video for it at Moda, at the Moda Lab. At Quilt Market, and it's a little technique I use where I don't clip anything. I don't clip between any of my squares. So I'm chain piecing, and I never clip any of those. I just keep sewing. And so if you check out the video, and I don't know if Pat can link to that for you, but if you check out the video, it will show you exactly what I mean, and it's very fast, especially when you're working with blocks that don't have to stay in order particularly, like when you're doing a whole bunch of tiny, you know, like a postage stamp block where you're just doing random little squares. It's very fast and super easy. It keeps things aligned really well and keeps you organized. So,
well, April, that is totally awesome. And I appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you so much. It's so fun to talk to you.
You visit April at aprilrosenthal.com. Look for her new book. Very exciting. And yes, and go and listen to their show and hang out. So thanks, April.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And if you have ever made a tote and ever asked anybody, how do I make a tote look really professional and put in, you know, what do I put inside of it to get the best results? Then you have been probably introduced to Annie Unrein's products at By Annie. She is a designer and a product developer who has created all these great fillings to make bags that are, you know, very professional looking. And so I am thrilled that Annie is going to come here. She's here now and is going to tell us a little bit about the products and, you know, how you can use them. So, hi, Annie.
Hi, Pat. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. My very first podcast.
Oh, well, then this is great. You can see now you'll be seasoned after this. You can
Let's go on tour.
So, you know, at what point did you decide that you needed to create what you couldn't find on the market?
You know, I had been designing patterns for about, well, I have now been designing patterns for about 15 years. And when I started designing patterns for purses and bags, I was always really disappointed in how my bags looked because I would use the battings and things that were on the market, and they were always floppy and didn't stand up and hold their shape. And I happened to buy a designer bag, and when it wore out, I could see that they had used something different in it. Mm-hmm. And I went looking for that product, which was basically a foam, and I couldn't find it. So I looked and looked and finally decided I needed to find somebody to make it for me, and that's kind of where it went. And that was probably about 6 years ago.
Wow. Wow. That's a big project to undertake, product development.
It definitely was. It took me probably about 6 months working with various different manufacturers and going back and forth with samples, trying them out, and just testing different foams, different fabrics. The thing that I designed is a product I named Bianni's Soft and Stable. And what it is a very firm but resilient foam. It's not very heavy. It's only about a quarter of an inch or less thick. So it doesn't add a lot of bulk in your purse. But because it's such a high-quality, dense foam, it's got really great ability to stand up and hold its shape. The problem that I found when I started working with foams is either they were too thick so you couldn't sew through them, or they were really soft and stretchy. And the biggest problem was if you tried to sew with foam right next to your feed dogs, it wouldn't move. Your feed dogs would just stop. And so I had to put a foam lining or a fabric lining on both sides of the foam. And it's done using a flame lamination process, so there's not any glues or anything holding it on. What they do is the foam runs over a flame, and it kind of liquefies the foam, which then makes the fabric stick to each side of it. So it makes it stays really soft and stretchy and, you know, not so stretchy that it stretches as you work, but it's just got great resiliency, and it just works wonderfully.
You know, it makes me think of buying high-quality cushions. If you're going to make a cushion for a chair and you just buy just sort of the craft cushions, I mean, you sit on them and you just, like, go right down to the base. You know, but if you buy some really high-quality, it's just a different kind of product then. So you have one that now when you make your bags, the outsides are very nice and straight and firm. They don't flop, right?
Right. I have one purse that I made that I used wooden handles on, and I like to display that when I go to shows because I have one that I made using the typical battings that we're told to use when we make purses. And when you stand that bag up and let go of the wooden handles, the whole bag just totally collapses and falls flat on the table. And the one that's made with soft and stable stands up and holds its shape. So when you're trying to get into your purse or bag to put something in it, it's really nice if it's not falling down constantly, if it stands up. And it just gives you such a more professional look when your bag has some structure to it. But the nice thing about soft and stable is it's not hard or stiff and hard to work with. So if you know, want to sew a lining in and turn it right side out through a 2 to 4 inch opening, it's just a matter basically of pulling it through. It's not bending and working against you like some of the products on the market that people will use for stiffness will do.
Now, what would you suggest, or maybe you can just give a tip, maybe that might be an easier way of saying it, for people who haven't used your liner before? Do you call it a liner? Is that what you call it?
I basically call it a batting alternative or a stabilizer.
A stabilizer. Okay, so when they're using the soft and stable, what is the biggest tip that you can give me for being successful with it?
Two tips. First of all, try a pattern that is written for soft and stable is probably the easiest thing, because there are little things that you can do, and that's always helpful. But if you're doing your own thing, there's two things you can do. You can quilt it if you want to, and to me that's the easiest thing because I treat it just like it was quilt batting. I put it between my two layers of fabric. I quilt all the layers, and then I cut my pieces for my purse or bag out of that quilted fabric. Then I don't use any other stabilizers or interfacings. So I'll sew my purse together, put pockets in if I want them, and then I just bind my seams with binding just as if I was binding the edges of a quilt, and that finishes off all my raw edges really nice. If you don't want to quilt it, then what I recommend is that you cut out your fabric for, say, the front of the bag, lay it on top of your piece of soft and stable, and have your piece of soft and stable a little bit bigger all the way around, because it's much easier if your foot is resting on the soft and stable completely. And so I don't like to cut my soft and stable out to the same size as my fabric at the beginning.
Yeah.
So then I just smooth my fabric onto my soft and stable. I'll put a few pins in kind of in the corners to hold them together. And then I just stitch an eighth of an inch from the edge around each piece. Mm-hmm. And that adheres my soft and stable and my batting together. I purposely did not make soft and stable with a fusible side because mm-hmm. I've ruined too many projects using fusible battings. Either mm-hmm. I don't have my iron hot enough and they don't stick, or my iron's too hot and I get that cellulite look. It looks like my thighs.
Right.
And I really don't like that look. And the thing that I've discovered over time, too, is that even though you may not get that look right at the beginning, as mm-hmm. you carry a purse and you put, you know, weight on the fabric, mm-hmm. it's been fused
stretches.
On, it will start to separate and you get that look. So this kind of avoids that. So I stitch an eighth of an inch from the edge. I cut my piece out. I assemble my bag if I'm putting in a separate lining, and then do my lining like I normally would. If I want a lining piece attached to that, I just mm-hmm. cut it out, align it on the back side, and again stitch an eighth of an inch from the edge. On my website, I have a whole bunch of video tutorials, and people can always go click on the video tutorial link. It just says tutorials, and I have a whole section on soft and stable. So I show a whole lot of those things for people to kind of watch, because sometimes it's hard to understand when someone's telling you how to do it, but it's much easier if you can see it done.
Now, you're out on the road to some shows, and you do some vending, like you were just in Houston at the festival, so people could meet you at the show at a booth. But do you also teach classes?
I do. I'm scheduled to go to Road to California in January. It's in Ontario, California, and I'm teaching classes there every night. I've got classes scheduled almost every month of the coming year all over the place. I haven't done a whole lot of traveling in the past because I just didn't have time, but my son and his wife have come to work for me, and we were actually growing fairly rapidly and hiring more employees, so hopefully I'm going to find time to get out and do a little more teaching. I love to go teach at guilds and stores, so contact me.
So when you do teach a class, then are you basically teaching purse making? Is that sort of what you love to teach?
Purses and bags are my favorite things, and mm-hmm. organizational type things that are usually end up being a bag or of some sort. And yes, so usually when I go to teach at a store or an event like Road to California, they pick a particular project, mm-hmm. and we just work step by step through that particular project. But the great thing is that once people have made basically any one of my projects, they've learned the skills that they need to go do lots of other patterns, because in most of the things, they're going to learn how to quilt their fabric with the soft and stable.
Right.
They're going to
right.
learn how to bind edges. They're going to learn to put in zippers and make straps. So even though that particular project might not be the one they want to make, they'll be able to mm-hmm. go tackle one of the other patterns without any problems because they'll know the skills.
So let's talk about some other parts of bag making, because you are a bag maker. That's, you know, that's, you're a designer. That's one of the big, you know, sets of patterns that you do. What are the kinds of bags you're seeing people really want to make, you know, based on what you design?
You know, the thing that I have found is that I like to be organized, and I think that's a trait of most quilters. It's really fun to have a place for everything mm-hmm. and everything in its place. And if you have a cute little bag that you can put all that stuff in, so much the better. So purses and bags are popular, but also mm-hmm. organization. I have one pattern called A Place for Everything that opens up, and it's got lots of zippered pockets, mm-hmm. Mesh pockets, and it zips closed, and you can carry it off to class and carry your 9x12 mat, your rulers, your rotary cutters, needles, and everything has its own little pocket, and that's been a really fun one to do.
It sounds like you're right. I mean, quilters, we just become obsessed with containers and way.
Absolutely.
Know. I don't know how many containers. I mean, and I, you know, I always see all kinds of patterns. It's like, oh yeah, I put this in that, put this other stuff in there. You actually have one that the people could try your pattern at your site for a pencil case, like a long little tube bag.
Yes, I do. It's one that we designed. My daughter-in-law, who works with me now, made it for her niece, who is 3 years old and already starting school in Spain. They start them really early there. But wanted to make her something fun to carry her crayons and things into school. So that's a free pattern on our website. We also have a pattern based closely on that, but sized differently, that's called quick zip cases, and that's one that you buy, but it's an expensive pattern, and it is sized to hold long things like knitting needles or rotary cutters, or I like using a quick turn tube turner to turn my straps and handles inside out, and I was always trying to figure out where to put those tubes in those little things that go inside them. Yeah. So I designed this so that they fit right in there, and I always know where to find those two.
That's right. You could just design a bag to put what you need in. So
There you go.
What can you give me a tip for zippers? We have about a minute or so left.
All right. The first tip I can say is use good quality zippers. I carry handbag zippers, and what sets them apart from other zippers is they have twice as wide of a zipper tape and an extra big pull, which makes them much easier to put in. And on my website, again, I have a video tutorial that shows you step by step all kinds of different applications for putting those in. But basically, I put it right side down on my fabric. I sew it with a quarter inch seam. I finger press it over to the back and stitch along the edge of the zipper tape, which finishes off my raw edges and gives me my quarter inch top stitching on the outside, and my zipper's installed. Easy, easy to do.
So you're doing this with two pieces, and then you assemble afterwards?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So I'm sewing the zipper to the pocket, for instance, and then if the other side of the zipper gets attached to fabric, or I put a binding on it, or I just sew it straight into my bag, then I treat it separately. So I do each side. The other really secret to doing zippers is I always use one longer than I need so that I can avoid the stops on either end, and I just let them hang out on each end, and then I cut those ends off.
Oh, Annie, that has been a marvelous tip, and this has been a great talk.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to seeing you again.
I know. We need to actually see each other, too, the next time. After we tried to this last time. We were like ships at sea. But everybody can visit Annie at buyannie.com, where she has the videos. She has a few free patterns that you can try out, her patterns, and, of course, her product. Thank you, Annie.
Thank you so much, Pat. Have a great day.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I am your host, Pat Sloan, and you're going to love this segment. You are going to really, really love it. I am excited because Lindsay Fullington, who is the multimedia editor at American Patchwork and Quilting magazine, is going to come on and chat with me, and she's going to ask me some questions. So this is going to be really fun. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Pat. Are you ready to be in the hot seat?
Oh, yes, in the hot seat. First, I have to ask you what, I have to give you a little more intro. Lindsay and I work together a lot because she's in charge of the podcast part. And, you know, I've known you for quite a few years now, but how long have you been at American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine?
I've been there for a little more than 3 years now, so not too long. You and I started working together pretty soon after I started.
Oh, okay. Well, I feel like, you know, you've been there as long as I've been quilting. So it's like, and were you a quilter when you came to work with them?
No, I had actually never touched a sewing machine when I started, but that changed pretty quickly.
Yes. Yeah. They don't let you stay in that state for very long.
No, they don't. But I love it now. I'm glad I got to learn it.
I know, and you followed along this year, and we're doing the free project, my free mystery quilt, Globetrotting. Your quilt is so gorgeous.
Oh, I had so much fun doing it, and that's absolutely what I wanted to start talking about with you today, because it was such a fun block of the month, and it was called Globetrotting, and it was through freequiltpatterns.info, and it was something I just seen you post about at the beginning of the year, and I thought, you know what, I need a project to get me quilting more, and, you know, of course, I thought I could handle one block of the month, and then I started a million other projects because I was so inspired, but why don't you just tell us a little bit more about where the idea came from for this block of the month?
Yeah, the free quilt pattern people asked me if I would work with them and design this project for them and then host it and run it. And so I decided I would create a block of the month that was piece blocks, and I wanted them to not be too difficult but have some sort of impact. So we started the whole project out with a super huge big block in the middle, and I don't know. Because I think everybody's more excited in January. You know, they're more willing to do like more work in January. But like by June, they're like, give me the easy blocks. I need the easy blocks now. So they were sort of spaced around like that. You know, you had a little bit more work. But I love medallion quilts. And so this is like a medallion sampler because each of the blocks is different. And there's not too many rows around. But all sort of kicked off with that huge, big center block. And did you like the theme of it being globetrotting?
I loved the theme. It gave me something to look forward to each month. And I loved hearing your little or watching your little videos each month about where the inspiration came from.
Yeah, it turned out to be a largely personal journey because I have lived in other countries and I lived in a couple of different places in the States. And so, and I want to go to different places. I've traveled a lot. So I decided that travel would be fun, you know, going around the globe. Plus my internet group is, has quilters from all across the world. So that was fun to sort of bring it in. And people would start guessing, didn't they? Like, what's the next city?
Oh, gosh. For, weeks and weeks in advance, they would be guessing what your next what your next block would be about. But I think that's a great idea anyways because, you made it so personal for yourself, but I related to a lot of the cities that the blocks represented. And I think it just encouraged people to see how they could make their quilts a little more personal and mean something to them.
Yes, several of the people did photo transfers from different cities and put it in their blocks. Yeah, amazing. Or they went and tried to find fabric. Some did really scrappy. Some, of course, had very controlled, you know, color palettes. One lady did this great embroidery in a bunch of the blocks with her embroidery machine. So they took it and really, like you said, made it their own. That part was so satisfying for me because I really believe everybody should make the quilt that they want to make. You know, I show two colorways just to help people, just like April Rosenthal said earlier, it helps people visualize it if I show more than one colorway. But, everybody just jumped off from there, and there are thousands of colorways.
I know. And, I mean, you have a Facebook group where you were asking people to join up and post their pictures of not only just the globe-trotting block of the month, but everything they were working on. And I, every day, I would log into Facebook and see, you know, hundreds more pictures of what people were working on and how they were designing their globe-trotting block of the month. And it was so inspiring, and people are so creative.
I know that I think was just, I've run internet groups for a very long time. My background's in computers, and so I like the internet. I like the community it builds. And when I started this, I thought, okay, I'll start a group, which is a different type of a format in Facebook other than a page or your personal area, the group area. And mine's all public, so you can, you know, see it. But it goes in people's feed. But we have like 33,000 plus, 33,500 or something as of this morning.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. just since January 1.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, but it is awesome. People love sharing. And that, like you said, they share all kinds of topics, not just my patterns, but other things they're
right.
working on.
Yeah, it's so inspiring to see, I mean, just people sharing not only like patterns they're working on, but also if they have questions, they post them on there. And I love reading people's comments, and I've learned some things from being on there too. And people are so helpful in that group and so positive.
Yeah, that is true. It is just they're very encouraging. Everybody's welcome from all levels. I've got people who say they've not even made a quilt yet to some of my designer friends who, you know, share their work, and or master quilters, who are people who do it for fun that are just at a very experienced level and will show a piece. I love it.
I know. I do too. So I know you have a new block of the month coming out next year, and you haven't said too much about it yet. Do you want to spill the beans on some of the details?
Yes, I am. I'll spill some beans. I spilled a tiny little bean the other day. I threw one bean out into the crowd. You know, that it'll be called Vacation Time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think everybody can relate to vacation and what vacation might mean to them, or vacation means to me. So each of the blocks will be similar. They'll have this is the fun part, is that each block will be something that you would do on vacation. And that's sort of how the blocks will flow. The format's different, and it is not a traditional layout. It'll be an asymmetrical kind of layout. I'll probably, like I did with Globetrotting, give sort of a graph of where blocks will go, because people just feel better when they have some sort of concept. Yeah, and there are a few people who, you know, maybe they really like things very structured, and that may not speak to them, but it'll give them an idea. I'm going to show two colorways again, because I just think that helps, and because I'm crazy, so it makes me.
Yeah, you're not busy enough, huh?
Right. And pretty soon I'll have the supply list. In the next few days, I'll post the supply list with the freequiltpatterns.info people. That's where everything lives, is at their website. They're the hosts. And then I'll do a little video, and so that'll all be, people can get their fabric ready for starting the first block, the January 1st or 2nd. Yay.
And will this one be only piecing too, or are you going to throw some applique in there?
Well, this time I'm going to keep it a piecing again. There are so many more people who piece, but, you know, I might have to, you know, break down and do something in between, like a little option or something along the way for the appliqueers to get their fix. I can put
and
this
so,
here.
I know. So what's the easiest way people can make sure that they have those patterns January 1st so they can start?
Right. Yeah, they can sign up. People can sign up for my newsletter at petsloan.com on the right sidebar, or you can go to freequiltpatterns.info and sign up for their newsletter. So either one or both. You know, we both share totally different content in our newsletters, but that will be the same. Also at my Facebook page and my blog, you know, so they'll all show up there.
Perfect. Well, I'm so excited. I'm doing this one too. I'm already
yeah.
I'm
oh,
almost
good.
Done with my globe trotting one, so I'm ready for a new project.
I know. I'm very proud of you. You have your whole top done, and you told me you were getting it basted and getting ready to quilt it.
Oh, yeah. Like, I started quilting it last weekend, so I'm giving it away as a Christmas present, so I have to have it done soon.
Motivation.
Yes.
You're a true quilter now, Lindsay, when you're making Christmas presents in December.
Yep. So let's switch gears a little bit here. And this is something which kind of relates to last minute sewing, but you ask your Facebook fans and your online audience to sew for at least 10 minutes a day, which I think is so great. And it's a great reminder to just work a little bit every day. Where did that idea come from?
You know, I've sort of had that as part of my being for a long time, and it kind of comes in and out of my communication with people. And so this year I sort of brought it back out to the front again, because I think that we forget to sew a little bit, and we forget that you can move your project forward even with just a little bit of sewing. Most people can find 10 minutes. 10 minutes really, there really is 10 minutes, but you just kind of have to make yourself do it, or remind yourself, yes, I'm going to go in. I'm going to do this. And of course, you know, what happens? It's usually more than 10 minutes, right?
Oh, yeah. I always end up sewing for much longer than that.
Yeah. That's what most people tell me. They go, oh, thanks. I was in there for 2 hours, you know, but. So, because I also do a lot of handwork, 10 minutes is very easy for handwork, whether you're picking up your binding or a sleeve or a label. If you're a piecer, you still have a little bit of handwork, or an embroidery or hand applique. And those things are small, they're portable, so you can get your 10 minutes in without being at your sewing machine or even in your workspace.
Right, which is a great tip. But even if you do have a sewing space, I mean, it's amazing how much you can cut or how much you can chain piece in just 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. And I've told people, oh, you can put a timer on, you know, but most people get it. It's just the whole act of being aware and saying, yes, it's important to me to do my craft because it makes me happy. It feeds my soul. It makes me a better, you know, person to know that I'm creating. So, yeah,
very
that's
true.
10 minutes. You can do it.
10 minutes. So do you have any other tips for making more time to sew? I mean, now everyone's so busy with holiday sewing, and I know you're busy all the time with your projects. Do you have any other tip for making more time?
Well, I have about 30 seconds, so I'm just going to tell you the biggest tip I have is to be sure that you always have something out, that you have it ready, that you have a place for it, and that you don't have to go and hunt and hunt and hunt and clear a space and, you know, dig through your stuff just to sew. So be sure you have a way to get to it quickly.
Perfect tip.
Yes. So, Lindsay, this was so fun. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for letting me interview you.
Yes, this was fun. I can't wait to see your quilt next year.
I'll make sure I post it online for everyone to see.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for being here. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Please visit us at allpeoplequilt.com and visit me at patsloan.com.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.